Good afternoon, everybody. Nice to see you. What an encouraging song for somebody just before they come up. I definitely pray that the Lord will be with me as I speak. And, you know, it's really His message that you hear. My name's Dwight. It's great to see some familiar faces and some new faces as well today. We're going to be spending most of our time in the book of Mark. And most of our time in Mark chapter 9. And for those of you that like points, I've got 3 points. So the first point is mountaintop amazement. Second point is see and seek God's glory. And the third point is feeling repentant and helpless. You know, it's funny, isn't it? There are certain times in everybody's life that's a special moment. I guess the Olympics is a special moment for many people. I won't quite class myself as a former athlete, but I did compete for Wales when I was much younger. And I remember even looking forward to the summer and competing in the county championships was a big thing. Never mind the Olympics. How many of you watched the opening ceremony? You know, it was going to be a fantastic event for everybody in our house. There are 4 of us in our house, myself, my wife, my 2 boys. And we all wanted to be part of this worldwide audience. And my 2 boys, who were 9 and 6, bugged me all day, "Daddy, can we have a special night tonight to watch this opening ceremony?" So I said, yeah, okay. You can watch it with us. The ceremony started, didn't it, just before, I guess 7 o'clock, but sort of 9 o'clock officially. And I turned around to my boys to see how much they're really getting into it, as my wife and I were. And my first son's reaction was, and my second one wasn't far behind him as well. They didn't quite appreciate the special moment. But you know, there are moments in all of our lives which are like mountaintop moments, aren't they? There are special times when we have to make a decision. Maybe it's the beginning or the end of a relationship. Maybe it's the beginning or the end of a new job. Maybe you're at the top of a certain place in your life and you need to make a decision. It's kind of like a mountaintop moment. And we're going to be talking a bit about that, you know, through the first point of Mark chapter 9. But just before we get there, a bit of context really. You know, as we get to this place in Mark chapter 9, we know that leading up to this point, amazing and dramatic events have happened in the life of Jesus. If you know your Bible well, you know, just before this stage, you know, Peter has confessed that Christ is the Lord. And the focus of Jesus' life begins to change. You know, at the beginning of, if you like, the first few chapters of Mark, the big focus is on who Jesus is. The second half of the book of Mark, it's all about his purpose. I was quite, you know, intrigued by the question, because in many ways, you know, I love thinking about, even though it challenges me sometimes, you know, what is the thing that God's really called me to? And I wonder what the answer to that question is for all of you. You know, what has God called you to? And the second half of Mark, it talks about really what the purpose of the life of Jesus is. So as we get in here, we can really start to get into what Jesus starts to talk about as the main purpose in the lives of people that want to follow him. And I guess, you know, if you're here today, you're at least curious about that. Either you're thinking about following him, or you're doing your best to follow him, or you're hanging on to follow him. But it's something that interests you in some way. So let's look at the first half of Mark chapter 9. And the first point, as I said, is mountaintop amazement. And he said to them in verse 1, chapter 9, "I tell you the truth. Some who are standing here will not taste death before they see the kingdom of God come with power." After 6 days, Jesus took Peter, James and John with him and led them up a high mountain where they were all alone. There, he was transfigured before them. This is often talked about as being the transfiguration time. His clothes became dazzling white, whiter than anyone in the world could bleach them. And there appeared before them Elijah and Moses, who were talking with Jesus. Peter said to Jesus, "Rabbi, it is good for us to be here. Let us put up three shelters, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." He did not know what to say. They were so frightened. Then a cloud appeared and enveloped them. And a voice came from the cloud. "This is my son, whom I love. Listen to him." Suddenly, when they looked around, they no longer saw anyone with them except Jesus. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus gave them orders not to tell anyone what they had seen until the Son of Man had risen from the dead. They kept the matter to themselves, discussing what rising from the dead meant. And they saw him, and they asked him, "Why do the teachers of the law say that Elijah must come first?" Jesus replied, "To be sure, Elijah does come first and restores all things. Why then is it written that the Son of Man must suffer much and be rejected? But I tell you, Elijah has come, and they have done to him everything they wished, just as it is written about him." We're going to stop there for the moment and talk about the first point, mountaintop amazement. You know, again, for many of you that know the Bible, or even have just heard stories, you know that amazing things happen on mountains in the Bible, don't they? Who's been to the top of a mountain? A few of you here, and I'm sure different places around the world. You know, growing up in Wales, we have our own mountain there. Now, it's called Mount Snowdon. It's more like a big hill, really. But I remember going to the top of there and looking down and thinking, wow, I could see so much, you know, for miles and miles and miles. And it just made me think more crisply about certain things that are happening in my life. And around the Bible, we know that amazing things happened on mountains. We know that in Mount Moriah, Abraham was led to offer his son Isaac. We know that upon Mount Gerizim, the blessings of God were shouted to those who obey. Mount Ebal was all about where the curses of God for those that disobey were mentioned. But one of my family's favorite mountain stories, Mount Carmel, where we know there was this massive contest, wasn't there, between Elijah and the prophets of Baal, and God sent consuming fire down to dispense of the sacrifices. We know at Mount Olives, it was a special place where Jesus would go and offer prayers. And we also know that was the place where he was betrayed and then later on arrested. You know, often on Mount Zion was a place where, you know, God's kingdom was talked about. But for me, and we're going to just flick back to the Old Testament a second in Exodus 33, but for me, one of my favorite moments, mountain moments, was the time in Mount Sinai. We see an encounter with Moses here, and there's a link which I'll draw back in a second to this particular time in Mark. So turn back to a second with me, and let's just read, as a point of context, Exodus 33. Exodus 33, verse 18. Then Moses said, verse 18 we're going to read from here, 33 verse 18. Then Moses said, "Now show me your glory." And the Lord said, "I will cause all my goodness to pass in front of you. I will proclaim my name, the Lord, in your presence. I will have mercy on whom I will have mercy, and I will have compassion on whom I will have compassion." But he said, "You cannot see my face, for no one may see me and live." Then the Lord said, "There is a place near me where you may stand on a rock. When my glory passes by, I will put you in a cleft in the rock and cover you with my hand until I have passed by. Then I will remove my hand and you will see my back, but my face must not be seen." So what's going on here? Well, you know, we could see that, you know, God came down in a mountain. God came down in a cloud. And when he spoke, of course, everybody was afraid. I'm not surprised. I'm sure I would be in that situation as well. But, you know, Moses went to the mountain and he begged to see God's glory, didn't he? And God responded. But he said, you know, we talked about when my glory passes by. But we know that, you know, Moses wasn't able to see God's glory directly, was he? Yet even getting close enough to God for Moses was enough to make his face shine with the amazing reflected glory of God. It's an incredible thing, you know. Even when we do get the sun in London, it takes a lot to make our faces shine, doesn't it? And there's this incredible description as we go back to Mark, where it talks about, in Mark, Jesus' clothes being whiter than anyone in the world. Dazzling, in fact. And let's go back to Mark chapter 9. So what are the similarities between this position we looked at in Exodus and this place we looked at in Mark chapter 9? Well, we have a mountain. We had a mountain in Exodus. There was a voice in the cloud, as we did in Exodus. And there was Moses. But, you know, is it the same situation? No. In fact, it's very different. You know, Moses had reflected the glory of God. A bit like, you know, the moon reflects the glory of the sun, doesn't it? The light of the sun. But here we see that Jesus was so different. You know, he was producing the glory of God. It comes from him. You know, Jesus didn't point to the glory of God like Elijah did or Moses did. He was the very glory of God himself. You know, how amazed are you by Jesus? How do you experience Jesus in an amazing way? You know, there are some people out there that will teach you who they will say Jesus is. They'll say, oh, he's just a messenger. Oh, he's just a prophet. Oh, he's just a good bloke. Or he's an amazing teacher. Or a mere archangel, you will hear some people trying to tell you. No, it's not true. You know, Jesus is God. He's amazing. But how often are you amazed by Jesus? You know, I think it's a choice, isn't it? Sometimes we can be on our mountaintop. We can be in an amazing time of change. And yet the choice is to be overwhelmed or to be amazed. I wonder which choice we can take. But how often are you still amazed by your God? You know, my wife is amazing. And I hope anybody that's a husband will say that. My good friend David. You know, one of the things that I really appreciate about you, Andy, sometimes is that sometimes if she's feeling a bit spiritually dry, as it were. You know, one of the things she does is she just takes time to write down all the amazing blessings that God has done in her life that week or that month. And it's just a great reminder for her of how she can stay amazed by God. You know, I have a place, I live in Isleworth going towards Heathrow, and I have a special place where I go sometimes as early as I can on a morning. And if I kind of sit on a special corner by the River Thames, at a certain time, I won't say summer, at a time of the year when it's bright, I can sit there and the mist is kind of coming in off the river and the birds are kind of floating in above. The sun is usually trying to break its way through the clouds. And it's just an amazing time of thinking, God. You know, and right then, whatever circumstances I'm going through, it doesn't matter. I can just see the glory of God. And it's amazing. What do you do to get amazed by God at your time on the mountain? You know, this moment, as I said, is sometimes called the transfiguration time. And interesting, the only other time the Bible talks about transfiguration as such is in Romans 12, verse 2. You know, you can turn there if you want, but I'll read it to you. And it basically says, and it's Paul talking, says, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is good and acceptable and the perfect will of God. You know, just it reminds me that, you know, the place to start being amazed is actually in your mind, not in your circumstances. And what helps you get amazed in your mind is actually reading the scriptures. It's an amazing thing. What do you do when you're on the mountaintop? How do you stay amazed? You know, point two is about seeing and seeking God's glory. You doing okay? You know, and the thing about seeing and seeking God's glory, I think, for me, is part of it is about being changed inside out. It's about being about making a massive transformation. When was the last time you changed something radically? You know, and maybe you can remember the first time you made a big decision. I remember for me as a kid, my first big decision was to stop calling my father Daddy. And when I called him Dad instead of Daddy, it was just a really big thing. I thought, oh, okay, Dad, you know. It was a massive thing for me. I mean, for my son, it's interesting, my son is 9. And, you know, I'm really into football. Sean will know. And for me, I'm going to offend at least half of the room here. You know, I've been a lifelong Manchester United supporter. And I'm sorry to say that, you know, when I had my first son, instead of, you know, I'm sure many of you would kind of just decide, well, I let my son just support whoever he wants to. I wasn't that humble. So I bought him Manchester United pajamas. I bought him a Manchester United bedsheet. And for the first 6 years of his life, he supported Manchester United. And then on his 7th birthday, he said, Dad, I've got something to tell you. I said, what's that? He said, I'm supporting Chelsea. But for him, it was a major decision. You know, and it's something for him, it took an inside-out change. Now, what is inside-out change for you? You know, sometimes, you know, when I think about, as we think about change, maybe even you're here, you know, and you've got a Christian faith and maybe you're struggling with, you know, how do I not just become a follower of Christ, but a disciple? And maybe you're being challenged about making some radical changes. You know, sometimes we can think it's just a tinkering, it's just a change, it's just a bit of minor makeup. But actually Christ calls us to change inside out, doesn't he? You know, sometimes we can think about, I heard somebody say, you know, before they really got to know God, they treated prayer like a bit of a spare tire. You know, when their life was having a puncture, they kind of brought it out and they prayed. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day and he said, yeah, you know, he said he remembered a time in his life when something happened and he decided to do a deal with God. He said, God, if you only take me through this situation. You know, the guy was part of a gang at the time. He was involved in some drug dealing. And he said, you know, he said he made a prayer with God. He said, God, if you just help me through this, I'll be with you forever. That was his pact. Sometimes we can be a bit like that, can't we, as we think about what it takes for us to change. But actually changing with Christ inside out means a radical change. You know, the Lord wants to see a whole new us. You know, I remember for me, actually, you know, this is a big weekend for me as well. 19 years ago yesterday, I got baptized, which was an amazing, amazing thing. But I can just about remember my life in my early 20s. And, I came to London. I was a... got on Unilever graduate scheme, became a Unilever marketing manager, and, you know, I thought I was something, you know, I was driving around London in my Golf GTI, and, you know, I competed for Wales in athletics and football, so I thought I was, you know, I was the man. And so, you know, my life, you know, I was paid very well as a young graduate, and so life was very full during the week, and very full during the weekends. And, you know, before I began to study the Bible seriously with friends from this church, basically my life was full out working during the week. Sometimes at weekends I'd pull out my Gideon Bible that I'd taken from one of the hotels I'd stayed at, one of my business trips. And then, you know, during the day I'd prepare for the Saturday night out. Some of my friends would take whatever drugs they would need to get themselves set up. I would take some alcohol and then would head for the clubs of Ladbroke Grove. And then, you know, would head for the clubs, and then the next morning, invariably, we'd wake up, maybe next to somebody that we'd met the night before. That was just life, you know. and I'd feel guilty for about a day, and then life would start again. But, you know, as I began to study the Bible and I realized that God was calling me to something different, I realized that I basically had I'd had a God-sized hole in my life, if that makes sense to anybody, which I filled my own insecurities with sport and women and dance and drink and those sorts of things. But I realized as I began to study the Bible, I needed to change inside out. That was the only real way I could get healed. Do you have a God-sized gap yourself today? You know, because, you know, what Christ is calling all of us to is to see and seek his glory. But we need to see Jesus for who he really is. You know, he wasn't just a man, he wasn't just somebody who called us to live by a certain set of rules, was he? But he really called us to get to know him. And I'm really excited about that, because I know that despite who I am, my many warts and all, he still loves me, which is an amazing thing. You know, I'm reading a great book actually right now. It talks about Jesus being wild and mean. You know, because if you're like me, sometimes maybe you grew up in a church. I grew up in the Methodist churches in South Wales, and often the picture of Jesus was a kind of, you know, it's sort of blonde, blue-eyed, sheep-carrying, kind of meek and mild, good guy. But actually, if you look through the scriptures, yes, he was kind, but he also came with a very serious message that he wanted to seek and save everybody, and he wanted everybody to be called to a life of him, a life of seeing and seeking his glory. You know, all the way through the scriptures, you see the amazing power and majesty that this involves. Turn with me in a second, to 2 Corinthians chapter 4. Because we know, you know, Paul uses all sorts of imagery about this great Jesus, and he helps us also to see what it means to seek God's glory. In 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 3, Paul talks about, you know, this part of this message. And 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 3, he says, "But even if our gospel is veiled, it is veiled to those who are perishing, whose minds the God of this age has blinded, who do not believe, lest the light of the gospel of the glory of God, who is the image of God, should shine on them. For we do not preach ourselves, but Christ Jesus the Lord, and ourselves your servants for Jesus' sake. For it the God who commanded light to shine out of darkness, who has shone in our hearts to give the light of the glory, to light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ." You know, but for some people, this is actually a stark message. You know, it's saying those who do not believe will not see the glory of Christ like this. But isn't it true? You know, we can't look to the world out there for our long-term solutions, because it has its own agenda, doesn't it? It's to Christ we need to turn, where we need to fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter, you know, of our faith. You know, but as I talked about before, you know, we really need to seek out who Jesus is to understand this. You know, it's not about attending a church, is it? Was in a sermon the other day, and the guy said, you know, in the same way as going to McDonald's doesn't make you a hamburger, or going to a garage doesn't make you a mechanic, nor does just going to church make you a Christian. You know, Christ is looking for our heart, isn't he? He's looking for us to understand who he really is. You know, and in the same way as we seek for what Christ really tells us is a path to salvation, we've got to study the Bible and really understand what it means. You know, the Bible doesn't talk about, thank you, David, it doesn't talk about the way to him being sprinkled on our forehead. It doesn't talk about the way to him as saying a prayer or reading a tract. It talks about him being the gate, doesn't it? Here's the way, the truth, and the life. We've got to understand that and listen out for that. as we seek to follow our Jesus. Have you been hearing Jesus' words? Are his words transforming you as you seek him with all of your heart? You know, what kind of person are you as you hear a message? Not just from me today, you know, as you hear a message from the Bible. Are you the kind of person that goes home and speaks to your family and says, you know, I heard a really great message today. I hope somebody else was listening. You know, are you the person that really listens and tries to apply it into your own heart? You know, sometimes we can be the kind of people also that, you know, we come to church and we put on our church mask. Then as soon as we leave, we're very different. I was speaking to somebody the other day, and you know, we called this the I'm okay, are you okay dance. What's that? You know, that's the kind of situation where, you know, you're in the, maybe you're in church, you're together in the fellowship, and you're chatting, and somebody says, are you okay? You go, yeah, I'm okay. You go, I'm okay, you're okay, we're all okay. And actually when you leave the room, you go back home, you're moody. Maybe you're exasperating your kids or your partner or your family. You know, maybe you're offending God in the dark. But you come back to church and you put on your church mask. You know, it's encouraging and exciting, but also challenging that Jesus knows us in every place that we are, but really wants us to seek his glory with everything that we have. You know, what transforms you, I wonder? What changes you? You know, God really wants us to see his glory in everything that we do. Are you ready to see God's glory? Can I tell you about my Auntie Clarice?
Yeah.
Some of you may have heard this story before. My Auntie Clarice, I think every culture has an Auntie Clarice. So it's the person in the family who can relate all the stories of things that happened across the generations. So my Auntie Clarice died about 12 years ago. When she was 19, she arrived in London from Jamaica, from the part of Jamaica called Port Antonio. And she came, as many of her peers did, to do nursing. And we always would go to Auntie Clarice's house in Tottenham and just be amazed by her knowledge of the generations. And one particular day, she told us this story of a cousin of hers who grew up in Jamaica in the early 1930s. And everybody heard of the Zeppelins. So the Zeppelin was a big balloon, basically. And in the 1930s, the German Air Force were using it both for reconnaissance, but also for a bombing raid in certain parts of the world. And in the 1930s, they were actually using a lot of these things to go over certain parts of the West Indies. And what Auntie Clara shared was that, you know, one of her cousins, like many of her devout family, were very devout, and they really were looking for their day to join the Lord. And one particular summer's day in the early 1930s, one of her cousins actually went to the top of a hill where she typically dry out her clothes, and she was hanging out her clothes, and all of a sudden in the distance she could hear this buzzing. But she wasn't sure what it was. And in the corner of her eye, coming out of the clear blue sky, came this shape, which was the shape of a 1930s Zeppelin balloon, basically. And my Auntie Clarice smiled as she shared what happened. She said, you know, what her cousin did next is she ran right to the top of the hill, she went down on her knees, she held up her hands and she went, Lord, take me as I am. She wanted to see God's glory and she thought it was coming to her right then. You know, how hungry are you to see God's glory? What will you do to seek and save God's glory? You know, we're coming to the final point. Feeling repentantly helpless. Feeling repentantly helpless. And we're going to pick up and look at the last part of our of my reading today in Mark chapter 9. Are you all okay? The healing of a boy with an evil spirit, Mark chapter 9, verse 14. When they came to the other disciples, they saw a large crowd around them, and the teachers of the law arguing with them. As soon as all the people saw Jesus, they were overwhelmed with wonder and ran to greet him. "What are you arguing with them about?" he asked. A man in the crowd answered, "Teacher, I brought you my son, who was possessed by a spirit that has robbed him of speech. Whenever it seizes him, it throws him to the ground. He foams at the mouth, gnashes his teeth, and becomes rigid. I asked your disciples to drive out the spirit, but they could not." "A unbelieving generation," Jesus replied. "How long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy to me." So they brought him. When the spirit saw Jesus, it immediately threw the boy into a convulsion. He fell to the ground and, rolling around, foamed at the mouth. Must have been an attractive scene. Jesus asked the boy's father, "How long has he been like that, like this?" "From childhood," he answered. "It has often thrown him into fire or water to kill him. But if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us." "If you can," said Jesus, "everything is possible to him who believes." Immediately, the boy's father exclaimed, "I do believe. Help me overcome my belief." When Jesus saw that a crowd was running to the scene, he rebuked the evil spirit. "You deaf and mute spirit," he said, "I command you, come out of him and never ever enter him again." The spirit shrieked, convulsed him violently, and came out. The boy looked so much like a corpse that many said, "He's dead." But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him up to his feet, and he stood up. After Jesus had gone indoors, his disciples asked him privately, "Why couldn't we drive it out?" He replied, "This kind can come out only by prayer." They left that place and passed through Galilee. Jesus did not want anyone to know where they were, because he was teaching his disciples. He said to them, "The Son of Man is going to be betrayed into the hands of man. They will kill him, and after 3 days he will rise." But they did not understand what he meant and were afraid to ask him about it. We'll finish there. Lots of things going on there, aren't there? I wonder what it is that you can notice. You know, I think feeling repentantly helpless. You know, yet again, there's a big argument going on. And you can see the teachers of the law and the crowd and even Jesus' disciples, the one who hadn't gone up the mountain, are here at the scene. The disciples are trying to exorcise this demon, and not for the first time, it's not working. You know, so we see this scene of confusion of everybody. You know, and we see this boy, don't we, being possessed by this demon, it's making him deaf and mute and causing him convulsions. And, it must have been an overwhelming, I've got hay fever. Sometimes I think that causes me problems. You know, this must have been an overwhelming physical and mental, spiritual as well, condition. And we see the boy helpless, we see the disciples helpless, we see the father helpless, and of course the teachers of the law as well. And we can look at this, we can look at the disciples here and we can go, yet again, the disciples are clueless. What on earth were they doing? How were they trying to solve this problem? And yet, if we think about ourselves, I certainly think sometimes, how often do I try and resolve one of my problems without praying, without really thinking about what I'm going to do to change it? You know, there's a saying, isn't there? Sometimes we do the same thing over and over again and yet expect different results. You know, the disciples actually tried prayerless exorcism for the same reason they didn't understand actually why Jesus had to die. They didn't see how weak and how proud they were, but also they totally underestimated the power of evil around them. In fact, you know, the only person, clearly other than Jesus, to come out with a story with any degree of credit was who? It was the only person to actually acknowledge his weakness, admitting he didn't have what it took to change the situation, and that was the father of the boy, wasn't it? Now, we see him ask, "Would you heal my son?" And of course, Jesus says, yes, you know, everything is possible for him who believes. Not guaranteed, but possible, I think is an interesting thing to note. But, you know, I love what the father said. You know, the father has the heart of feeling repentant, but helpless. You know, he says, look, I'm trying. I'm full of doubts. And Jesus heals the man's son. But I think, you know, here's the thing. You know, I think Jesus is showing the man, but also I think for all of us, you know, Jesus isn't looking for perfect righteousness. You know, he's not looking for us to be complete, but he's looking for us to be honest. He's looking for us to come to him, warts and all, and just say, look, help me. He's looking for us to feel and act repentantly helpless and get the help we really need. I think Jesus is trying to show us the right way to connect with him. And there's a message here for all of us, I think. It's not about perfection, but it's about going to God and seeking him with honesty, with a heartfelt desire to change. To say, look, right now I don't have the strength I need to change this situation, but I'm going to pray. I'm going to be humble, you know. I'm going to try. I'm going to get the help I need. You know, and the amazing thing is that, you know, the same Jesus that, as part of God, created the latest thinking is 144 billion galaxies or something. You know, the same Jesus, God, that created those galaxies knows the problems and issues of everyone here. Front row, middle row, even the back row. That's encouraging, isn't it? And that's the same Jesus that can touch all of us wherever we are. But we've got to go to him with that helplessness, with that humility, with that desire. You know, at this stage in the book of Mark, it's really interesting because we see a glimpse into the glory of God. And we also kind of get a bit of an idea going forward that there will be a time that Jesus is going to suffer, you know, naked and bloodied in the dark. But he's willing to do that for all of us, which is amazing for me. And you kind of get the sense that even on the mountain, you know, at that transfiguration moment, that, you know, God was strengthening Jesus for his mission, which is an incredible thing. But, you know, that same Jesus that can be strengthened on the mountain is the same Jesus that can strengthen us, whatever we're going through. You know, whether you're visiting here for the first time today or it's your 19,000th time, you know, it's amazing to think that God can touch you anywhere. You know, the same Jesus that knows you also wants you, though, to make him known. I think that's part of our challenge as well. You know, somebody once described to me as the Bible, as the Bible. The Bible is an amazing story of amazing lives. And it's true. You know, and as we come to the end of the time together now, you know, my first point was about, you know, those mountaintop amazing times. Those times can touch all of us. You know, the second point was about really seeking and seeing God's glory. And the third point being around really feeling repentant and helpless. But you know, I love stories. You know, stories can help us in all sorts of ways. Obviously, the ultimate stories are in the Bible to help us change in a long-term way. But let me just share with you another story I heard recently as we come towards the end. You know, and it's a story I read recently about a little girl. A little girl who was adored by her mother. And her mother told her over and over again that the key to life was happiness. That'd be a great thing to be told, wouldn't it? And on a particular day, she's probably about 5 or 6, it was time for the little girl to go to school. And you know, as happens in school, there was a particular day when the teachers asked everybody, they asked them that crucial question, what do you want to be when you grow up? And the little girl thought, yeah, I know the answer to that question. And one by one, all the pupils in the class went up and they wrote their answers on the board. And the little girl went to the board and she said, okay, yeah, I know the answer to that question. She wrote, great, H-A-P-P-Y. She said to the teacher, you know, I know what the answer is. The answer of what I want to be when I grow up is happy. The answer is happy. And the teacher said to the girl, you don't understand the question. And the little girl, buoyed by what her mother had said, said to the teachers, you don't understand life. You know, the Bible is full of stories of life. I don't know where you are in your journey of life. But yes, Jesus absolutely wants you to be happy, but he'd rather you were holy. He loves you to be content, but he'd rather you'd be close to him. You know, he wants all of us to understand that at the time when it's time for us to have these mountaintop experiences, he wants us to be amazed by him. He really wants us to understand that for our long-term change, if we seek him with all of our heart, we can see his glory. He really wants us to be changed inside out. And he'll give us the answer to our promises if we go to him with an attitude of feeling repentant and feeling helpless. You know, how's your heart today? I pray there's something in the communion, something in the message that's touched you. You know, I pray that you can be touched, again, not just for today, but in the week and the months ahead. Thank you so much for listening. But most of all, thank you, God, for Jesus. Amen.